we're beginning this week with Shulchan Aruch, Reish Lamed Beis, Sif Tes Vav. This is actually the language of the Rambam. If someone sells karka, the buyer eats the peiros or lives in the chatzer, and after a considerable amount of time has elapsed, they find a mum. So the buyer, of course, has the right to return the property and get his money back. However, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, adds a major gotcha that you're going to have to return all the peiros that you ate. And even not tangible things like peiros, even if you just lived in the chatzer, you're going to have to pay rent for all the time that you lived in his property. Now, this is obviously of major practical import. Many cases are like this. Many cases, you buy a car, you discover a mum in the car. A month later, you're going to return the car. Do you have to pay rent for the car, for the use of the car for that month? Very practical question. And it's noteworthy that the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, Ar Sameach points out this is actually a Tshuvas HaRif, even earlier. Riff talks about a very similar case. If someone sold a chatzer, then they found the mum, they wanted to reverse the sale. The Riff says again that he's going to have to pay schirus. At least in certain cases, he's going to have to pay schirus. So it's noteworthy that all these poskim, the Riff, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, are talking about karka, a chatzer, a field from which you eat peiros. My example of a car, the Talton. Is this then going to apply? Most cases that we're going to encounter in Nakachtos, in our day-to-day lives, are going to be Metalton. Does the same halacha apply to Metalton? So, jumping ahead for a minute, when I was going through my notes, I found I had a reference to a tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss in the Darche Hara. He talks about a case of kind of thing that we can very easily imagine coming up in the real world. Someone bought a laptop computer from someone else, and he was promised by the seller, someone was bringing it to him from Hutzlar, to Eretz Yisrael, and the guy bringing it told him there's a year warranty. 10 months after he took possession and used it, the machine died. And it turned out it wasn't under warranty, because the warranty was from the time of the initial purchase, which had been 2.5 months before the guy brought it to him. And the guy tied it to Mechatois. Warranties are very important. Laptops are fragile. They break easily. And they typically break right before the warranty period is up or right after they're up. So Rav Asher Weiss did indeed say it was a Mechatois, that he has the right to get his money back. I didn't focus on that part of the tshuva. However, in the end of the tshuva, he says, note that if you want to get your money back, you will have to pay for the use of a laptop for a year. And in spite of the fact that this is metaltalin, not karka, so he says the halakha applies to metaltalin too. And what I want to discuss now is the background of the shaila. Does this halakha of the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rif apply to metaltalin as well as karka? So we find at least three poskim, two major early poskim, later poskim, who take for granted that the halacha does apply even to metaltalin. The first is a Shulta Gibarim. The Shulta Gibarim talks about a mechachtos on a horse. Someone bought a horse, rode the horse, used the horse for a while, eventually found a mum, returned the horse to the seller, got his money back. The Shulta Gibarim says, according to this Rambam, according to this din, that when you buy a chatzer or a sada and you return it, you have to pay for the peiros. So to here, you have to pay for the benefit you had from the horse. The Shulta Gibarim says something very strange, which is that if you made some profit by using the horse, you would even have to pay that profit to the seller. Very hard to understand what that means. Why you should, if you use the horse to make a business deal and you made the $1 million. Very hard to understand that he really means you have to pay that back to the seller also. But putting aside that lashon, his basic din is that if you had any hana, even if you didn't make profit, he says you have to pay whatever hana you had, pay rent basically for the horse back to the seller. Doesn't seem to have occurred to him there's any difference between karak and metaltalin. Just takes for granted the Rambam's din applies to metaltalin too. We find a similar hara in the tshuva of the Rashbash, Rav Shlomo ben Shimon Duran, the son of the Tashbats. In his tshuvas, he talks about a case of someone who bought textiles, fabric apparently, raw material, and found some kind of movement, some kind of decay, or some kind of damage to the fabric. So the bulk of his tshuva, he discusses things that we've been seeing throughout the siman. The last few sifim, how do you know when the damage occurred? Can you prove that it was there before the sale or not? If it was moth-eaten or something, How do you know when the moth came? Maybe they came afterwards. Maybe it takes a certain amount of time for it to become this badly moth-eaten, and you can assume it did happen before the sale, if the sale was recent. The bulk of the tshuva, he goes through these kinds of considerations. How do you know? Misafik, what do you do? How do we establish al pi halacha when we presume the damage was? At the end of the tshuva, he says, assuming that we've established that the mum did predate the sale and therefore is grounds for reversing the sale, you should know that if you made the textile into a garment and you use that garment, you will have to pay back the seller, or when the seller gives back the money, he'll deduct from that whatever benefit you had from wearing the garment for whatever duration you wore it for.
Will you pay the rent of a garment or the rent of fabric?
That's a good question. I don't remember exactly his language, exactly how he expresses it. I assume you would only pay the rent of the raw fabric, because the fact that you made it into a garment, that was your addition, so I assume you'd only have to pay him for the fabric, but I have to check his language more carefully.
Will that be alleviated by the Shevach Kli, the fact that you improved it from material?
Right, yes, that's a very good point. That's exactly what he does say. I should have mentioned that. He says, on the other hand, the Rambam also says, back in the Sif we learned last week, the Rambam says, which is what you're referring to, Mishbiach Nodl Shvachat Tvira Me'amocher. Anytime the buyer returns something to the seller, if he made a mum, like we discussed last week, sometimes he is responsible for the mum, sometimes he's not responsible for the mum, but if on the other hand he improved the thing before he returns it, then he has the right to charge the seller for that improvement. So that's exactly what the Rosh Bash says. On the one hand, the seller, you start with the purchase price, then you deduct from that whatever benefit you had, and then you add back into that whatever benefit he has, and then the final number is what he returns. Exactly. A third postik who took for granted these two tshuvas, that these are early, the Shulta Yibarim, the Rosh Bash, are early postkim, time of the Shulchan Aruch, or earlier, before the Shulchan Aruch. The third later postik we have is Rav Yosef Berdugo, noted Rav of Meknes, Morocco, 19th century. He talks about a case, again, of an animal. Someone bought an animal and used it for a while, similar to the case of the Shulta Yibarim, eventually discovered a mum and returned it to the seller. So, in a very brief comment, he just says that it's true we can get his money back, but he will have to deduct, I'll be the Rambam, it's Mefurish Rambam, he says, Mefurish Shulchan Aruch, he will have to deduct from the purchase price, the Hanah that he had, the Schiris of the animal for the period that he used it. Here again, he makes a point similar to the point Dan was making, that, but he maintained the animal, he paid from his owners, he fed the animal. So, if we're looking at it as, if we're unwinding all the costs, then it's true that he had Hana, but he also took care of the guy's animal, so he'll get to deduct that from the amount that he's deducting from the purchase price. So these poskim all took for granted that the halacha applies even to metaltalin, and that is the position of Rosh Weiss too. Who's chalik on this? So Rav Asher notes in Ar Samach, and before the Ar Samach, or at the same time, or earlier than the Ar Samach, we find the Gadol of Minsk, on his comments on the Mishnayos. And the truth is, there is, as I understand it, considerable basis for a distinction between Karak and Metaltalin, and the Sugya actually is fairly complex, but let's try to go through at least what the basis for this distinction is. They argue that we find in Hilchos Gzela a major difference between Karak and Metaltalin. When it comes to Gzela, the rule is Karak ain't an Gzelas, a rule many of you have probably heard, that the regular halachas of Gzela do not apply in many ways to Karka. Karka is considered always Breshusa Demare. You don't get a Kinyan Gzela on Karka. Metaltalin on Gzela. Now, one major nafkamina of that is, probably the major nafkamina is, that if you steal someone's car, deliberately, malicious intent, grand larceny, grand theft auto, you steal his car, you drive it for 6 months before he catches you, before they catch you, they take the car back, you don't owe anything for use of the car for 6 months, and the hesber is, kolagazlan mishalma kishas exela. As soon as you took it, you became a gazlan. All the hano, all the peiros is considered brishuscha, because you stole it, even though it's not yours, obviously. As soon as they catch you, they return the car to the owner. But legabe the hano, we say you don't owe anything for any of the hano. When it comes to karka, the rule is different. When it comes to karka, because karka ain't an exelas, the category of exela doesn't really apply to karka in that same way. Halacha is you do have to refund to the person you stole it from all the peiros, all the hanah that you had. If you deliberately go take someone's karka, throw him out and live there, you do have to pay. Again, there's a whole sugya of zeh nena, zeh lo chaser, if he is chaser, if he's not chaser, if you're nena, if you're not nena, but putting aside those details, in general, in principle, you do owe the person whose karka you stole for the hanah that you had. And the consensus of the poskim is that that's a fundamental chiluk between karka and metalton. Metalton are nigzalin, so you don't owe anything for the hanah that you had. Karka is ainan nigzalis, and you do.
Is there any consideration for the fact that the car is now, you know, is worth less?
Yes. Well, sometimes. So the rule is, for a gazlan, if the gazlan makes a shinoy, or if he makes a hezek that's nicker, then he will have to pay for that as a mazik. That if he's not returning it kain shagazel, he will have to return. He will have to pay for that. However, many kinds of depreciation or of loss of value are not considered hezek nicker. The Gemara talks about gazel avadim v'hizkinu, gazel behema v'hizkina. So it's a complicated sugya in the beginning of Siman Shin Samach Gimel, but halacha is not always going to dovetail with what we might intuitively think of as fair. There are cases where the guy will have a car that's worth less, that the gazel will not have to pay for that. Sometimes he will, and sometimes he won't, but not always. There are times that he will, but he won't always have to pay for it. But here we're discussing cases. Even cases where, for simplicity's sake, let's assume that there's no depreciation. Let's say it's simply a house that you live there for 6 months, and there's no noticeable decrease. And we're focusing on that is another important complication. We're not getting into that. We're simply discussing the mere fact that you were nena, and the halacha is by karka you pay for that, but metalton you don't. Now the sugya Bava Kama says that if someone takes metalton of someone else and uses it, tokif, derech zeli, he seizes it against the owner's will and uses it shelo kedin, does he have to pay rent to the guy? The complicated sugya, but the basic halacha l'maisa is that it depends. If he took it, I died to the guy's lanusa, he took it not intending to pay for it, not intending to be fair or reasonable about it in any way, he just stole it, then he does not pay for it. Kind of counterintuitive, it's kind of chote niskar, but he becomes a gazlan. Gazlan, metalton, as we just said, doesn't pay for any hanah that he had, because he's kind of exhaled legabe this, he doesn't pay for it. If he was nachas adaita de l'shalem schar, if he was planning on paying schar, he did it without permission, the guy didn't want him to take it, the guy said, leave it there, I'm not interested in renting it out, but if l'maisa he did it with intent to pay schar, then he does have to pay schar. So karka, you always pay schar. Metalton, it depends. If it was a daita de gazel nusa, you don't pay schar. If it was a daita de mashalim schar, a daita de agra, a daita de mashalim schar, then you do pay schar. So with this background, now we can understand the dispute among the achronim, whether in our case of mekachtos, you metalton, whether you have to pay for the hanah that you had or not. The Argadol and the Ar Sameach, and we find some of these faras anticipated already in the Truma Sakri and in the Devar Chaim, Orbach. They all say that we find a tremendous difference between Karak and Metaltlin. The question is, the Gemara says two things, Adai to the Gazlan Nusa, Adai to the L'Shalem Schar. So when it's L'Shalem Schar, you do pay. When it's Gazlanus, you don't pay. We have a whole bunch of cases here, Mechachtos, and a number of other cases that Akronim bring, which we're not going to get into right now, which are neither Adai to the Gazlan Nusa nor Adai to the L'Shalem Schar. Mechachtos, I certainly wasn't planning on stealing it. I also wasn't planning on paying schar. I thought it was mine. When I used this house for the 6 months before I returned it, when I used this car, this behema, this laptop for 6 months before I returned it, I certainly wasn't planning on stealing it. I'm a good guy and I don't steal things. I also wasn't planning on paying schar. So that's how Ar Sameach puts it, for example. What does the Gemara mean? The Gemara contrasts l'shalem schar versus gazlanus. Which is the ikker? Do we say that as long as it's not l'shem gzela, automatically I'm not a gazlan and I do have to pay schar? Or do we say no? Unless you specifically had in mind to pay schar, that's the equivalent of a daita to the gazlan who say you don't pay schar. So here, do you say, since l'maisa I didn't have any intention to pay schar because I thought it was mine, then I have the same din as the gazlan that I never intended to pay schar, so I don't get assessed schar even by metaltlin? Or do you say no? Since I didn't have in mind to do gzela, then I'm not treated as a gazlan. I'm treated as a good person, and a good person does have to pay schar, even though, again, it's a little counterintuitive. It's like chote niskar. That's the din. So Rav Asher says that din is miyuchad to a gazlan. He understands, apparently, only someone who actually is a gazlan, who intended to steal, only he becomes pater from schiris. Anyone who didn't intend to steal, no shachas to that sugya, he's not a gazlan. And whether he intended to pay schar or didn't intend to pay schar, it makes no difference. He always has to pay schar, and it's pasha. He doesn't understand the Ar Sameach, he says. You have the Shilta Gibarim and the Rosh Bash, who say that you do, and they're Kadmonim, who say that you do, and then you have Ar Sameach, who has a suffix, which he doesn't even understand, he says. And it's pasha l'halacha, he says, that you have to pay schiris, you have to pay the hanah, even from a talshlin. Neither Gisa, he doesn't mention that there are numerous other poskim who are not so sure. Besides the Arsamech, we also have the Argadol, who clears this exact Shaila. The Argadol even brings the Ritva that Pesach Tshuva brought in last week's Limud. The Ritva seems to say that if you have Hanav from the property, you don't pay Schar. And the Trumas Akri and the Divrei Chaim, Orbach, not the Sanzer of the Divrei Chaim, son of the Divrei Mishpat, they also have Stadim based on Rishonim that if someone thinks it's his, they talk about a case where a Gazlan sold the property he stole to some innocent buyer, or rented the property that he stole to some innocent buyer, or gave the property, or lent the property that he bought to some innocent buyer. So there's a complicated sugya, we don't have time to get into it, but they bring Rishonim, Rashba. They bring Rishonim who say, the Shach seems to go like this, that you don't pay Schar, because even though you're innocent, you didn't intend to be a Gazlan, you also didn't intend to pay Schar. And if you bought from a Gazlan, you're like the Gazlan, even though you didn't intend to steal. So in spite of what Rav Asher Weiss says, it seems to me there is a serious basis in the poskim for the idea, if you didn't intend that as long as you didn't intend to pay Schar, you may very well have the same status as a Gazlan, and you don't owe Schar. By Metaltlan. By Karka, you always do, because Karka's ain't an exelus. But Metaltlan, if you don't mean to pay Schar, there is considerable basis in the poskim for the idea that you will not have to pay Schar, since you didn't intend to pay Schar, you weren't Noches Adaita de Agra. Just one last point Rav Asher makes is that, assuming you do pay Schar, how much Schar do you pay? He says, in his case, with the laptop, so I don't know, you know what year he was writing, what type of laptop he's talking about in Israel, but the number he gives is that a typical weekly rental for a laptop would be about $70, he says. So for practically a year's worth of renting a laptop is well above the purchase price. He says it's obviously, it's absurd on the face of it to use that kind of calculation for the deduction. So he says, and apparently the reason is because people don't really rent laptops long term. If you need a laptop for a year, you buy one, you don't rent one. So there is no real long-term leasing market for laptops. So Rav Asher says, and this is something we've discussed in the past in the context of Hezek too, Rav Asher says, what you do is, instead of looking at short-term rental prices, which is what the Rambam seems to say, but he says what you would do in such a case is you would use some kind of depreciation, amortization formula. You would say, if a laptop has, he says, say, an expected value of 3 years, then you would say, and this is about 1 year, so you start with a figure of roughly a third, but then he makes the point I was very happy to see, which we've discussed also, which is that items are worth more in their first year than the third year, he says, especially a laptop. As it goes on, it gets, I don't know if he means the software cruft or he means the hardware itself deteriorates, but whatever it is, he says, a laptop is in better condition and more desirable in its first year than the third year. So a first year's worth would be a little bit more than a third, some percentage more than a third of the total price. And lahalacha, that is actually what he was mechayev the guy. He was mechayev the guy. He keeps saying it was Derek Pshar, it's not Mikra Din, but he's mechayev the guy to obligated the seller to return to the buyer the purchase price, minus something a bit more than a third of the price due to the fact that he had used the machine for more than a third, for about a third of its expected lifespan.